Good morning. I'm Mark Smith. Joining me by phone this morning is Arkansas 1st District Representative Rick Crawford. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark.
Good to have you with us. You were not in Washington for the inaugural this week, but I'm sure you've heard the president's inaugural address or at least excerpts from it. Any reaction to the message or the vision outlined by the president?
Well, you know, first, you know, obviously congratulations, you know, on his inauguration on a second term. But as far as the vision he laid out for the country, it sounded an awful lot like, you know, here's what the government can do for you. We know that the government has a role to play, but I think it's important to remember that we're a nation with a government, not a government with a nation. And I think he has kind of that role reversed. And so, you know, one of the driving forces of what motivated me to come to Washington was to try and shrink the size of government. And it sounds like the president used his inaugural address to talk about what he wants government to do and how he wants government to play a bigger role and an even bigger role than it already does in our everyday lives. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I'm still committed to trying to implement permanent spending controls like a balanced budget amendment and, you know, really make some fundamental changes about how Washington does business. So, and, you know, beyond the congratulations on a second term, I really wasn't very impressed with what his vision entails for the future of this country.
Well, you mentioned, you know, government does have a role to play. In your mind, what is that role?
Well, you know, I don't want people to think that that we should do away with the government. We shouldn't. I mean, the government, the Constitution has some very specific mandates for what the government is supposed to do. I mean, obviously, national defense is one of those things. We're supposed to build roads and infrastructure. That's critical because that facilitates commerce. But our government is set up to serve a free people and to serve free markets, not the other way around. It's not that a free people is set here in the United States to serve the government or that free markets are established here to serve the government. So we're having a real crisis of conscience here with respect to what our country's supposed to look like and where we stand with respect to the vision of the founding fathers. You know, quite frankly, that's one of the things that's I see the president really trying to reverse the role of the government rather than the government being a facilitator of free markets through investments in infrastructure improvements and national defense and so on. It seems to me like he would rather the free markets exist to support government and that the free people exist to support government and wait for, you know, the next directive from Washington. And I just think that really is not what our country's about.
Of course, fiscal matters will remain a primary focus in this Congress. How do you feel about it? Something we were just hearing about on NPR, this no budget, no pay measure that's being proposed right now for Congress?
Well, for the past couple of years, I've supported efforts that would force the Senate to pass a budget plan. You know, they haven't done it, and it's almost 4 years now. But taking a look at the bigger picture, you know, I made the point last fall, and I think that you know, the folks of the 1st District agreed that passing a budget just simply not enough. It wasn't long ago that Congress had a big clash over entitlement spending and these out-of-control deficits. That was back in the 90s. And at the end of that decade, there was some entitlement reform. Spending was cut, and both political parties, you know, came out and said, guess what, the era of big government's over. But what we really saw was that we were entering an era where we would see the fastest rate of growth of government than we'd ever seen, and more than we ever thought possible. In fact, since 2000, we've seen an increase in unfunded entitlement spending of about $30 trillion. So it's important to note that even though you know, we're talking about trying to get Senate to pass the budget, we were passing budgets all along during that period. So a budget by itself is not enough. And so I think we need something bolder. I'm not for this proposal, and I think it's because a budget plan that supposedly balances within 10 years instead of 20, I think it's unrealistic to think that we're going to see Congress stick with that plan. We've seen these good pieces of legislation, well-intentioned, and I specifically I'll cite the 1995 Graham-Rudman-Hollings Act. They start off with, you know, a lot with the wind at their back, but 2 or 3 years into the deal, you know, people start to lose heart. We see leadership changes, you know, and then they put that on the shelf and they try something new. I just think that we have to think longer term. I think we need to be bolder, and by bold, I'm talking about permanent spending controls that will force Congress, not just the 113th Congress, but future Congresses, to operate in a responsible manner. So the statutory measures that we're talking about and what we're going to be putting on the floor today, I don't think are enough to make sure that long term we address our spending problem in Washington.
Well, as you, I'm sure, know by now, in Congress there seems to be what you want and then what you can actually get. Where do you think spending cuts are needed, and what spending cuts do you think you can actually be agreed to?
Well, you know, what we've seen is with sequestration, there's already been, you know, that's bearing down on us. We know that there are going to be some pretty stark cuts in places where we don't necessarily want them, for example, in defense. And you know, other areas that we don't want to see those kind of cuts implemented, like Social Security and Medicare. So what we need to do is take a look at, certainly we have to talk about entitlement spending, but we have to, I think, put the framework in place that puts everything on the table in a responsible manner. And a balanced budget amendment or a spending control of, or a spending limitation amendment does that, and I think the most responsible way. But, you know, looking at a 10-year path to balance, that's going to be tough. And it also, there are some assumptions made there that I don't think that are fair, and that, number one, we don't know what the next Congress is likely to look like. We don't know who the leadership is going to be, and we don't know what the situations are going to be even 2 years down the road, let alone 10. So without the permanent spending controls in place, I don't think it's realistic to think that we can achieve a balance in 10 years. And so, you know, again, I think that we need that fundamental reform to make sure that it's not just talked about today, but that, in fact, there is a clear path and that the Constitution mandates that we take that path.
Is the atmosphere in Washington now, and particularly in Congress, different since the election? Are there challenges in the second term for you that are different from your first?
Probably so. I think what we're going to see is a different line of rhetoric that obviously the president is going to play a key role in the midterm elections in 14, and so I think they're already gearing up for that midterm election fight, that he knows that, if you know, what he'd really like is to have unfettered control in the last 2 years of his last term. And he's going to do everything he can to affect that. And so I think that's what we're seeing right now, is he laid out his vision in his inaugural address, and you know, his transition from his campaign to a 501c4 lobbying organization to help communicate his message. It's obvious to me that he's going to play an integral role politically over the next 2 years to affect that 2014 midterm election, and so that is certainly having an effect on the discourse up here in Washington right now.
Well, the president in his address vowed to address climate change. What are your thoughts on this goal?
Well, you know, I think that there's a lot of talk about climate change, has been for a long time, but I think that there's not sound science to support some of the initiatives that the president, I think, is committed to. And, you know, we know that you know, some of the research was faulty, and it drove a lot of the agenda for a long time, and then it turned out that it you know, there were some questions about the validity of that research. And, you know, the idea is that you know, a bunch of scientists get together and they say a consensus of scientists have said X, Y, and Z. Well, you know, science is the absence of consensus and the presence of fact. Because, you know what, we could have a bunch of scientists that get together and say, there's a consensus among this group that gravity no longer exists. That doesn't change the fact that gravity still exists. And so science is not about trying to build consensus among peers. It's about fact. And unfortunately, I just don't see a lot of the green initiatives that are being talked about supported by scientific data, but more supported by a political agenda.
Well, also causing concern for many people are new gun laws. The president has proposed restoring the ban on so-called assault weapons and limits on high-capacity magazines and universal background checks. Are any of these proposals unreasonable measures to you?
Well, I think what we've missed here in the wake and the aftermath of the Sandy Hook tragedy is the opportunity to really explore and commit to school safety and mental health issues rather than turn it into a gun consortium, is which really basically what the vice president said about. So school safety and the safety of our children, you know, that's a common goal shared by parents everywhere. It's unfortunate that the president has chosen to bring back the assault weapons ban and to limit ammunition and so on. I would just say new laws aren't the answer. I think what we need is a stricter enforcement of the laws that are already on the books, and that's a good place to start. And that's unfortunately what we see in Washington on almost every issue. Congress, I think, tends to think that we just have to make laws simply because that's what Congress is supposed to do. But in fact, I think we would serve our constituents and the country better if we were more diligent about enforcing laws that are already on the books. It's already illegal for criminals and people with mental illnesses to own firearms. So what we need is a stricter application of that law as a good starting point.
Well, one thing the president has not proposed, and I know Congress would not support, a majority of Congress would not support any proposal that would involve the confiscation of personal firearms. So why is this such a fear that that's what's coming among many people?
Well, I think that what you've seen over the years is just kind of an indication of really the president's disdain for the Second Amendment and an armed citizenry. But disarming law-abiding citizens doesn't help reduce violent crimes. You know, firearms are the tools, but not the cause of the crime. And I would also point that statistically, what we see is in those cities and where we have the highest degree of gun control, that's when we see the highest incidence of gun crime. You look at the major metropolitan areas that have very strict gun laws, and that's where you're going to see a higher incidence of gun crime. And so, to me, that ought to be a pretty telling statistic for most people as we're sitting back trying to say, what do we do with our gun laws? Again, I get back to that point about let's enforce the laws on the books and not, you know, set about making new ones just because that seems to be a congressional prerogative that we just want to make laws all the time.
Well, I want to get to another issue. Yesterday was the 40th anniversary of Roe versus Wade, the decision on abortion. This decision remains a very divisive issue in our nation 40 years later. There is a March for Life planned for this week, I believe, which will likely include several Arkansans.
Yeah, that's one of those days that I remember kind of in a maybe a little differently than other folks, because my birthday was yesterday, too, and so... Hmm. It's ironic that you know, I celebrate my birthday on the day that you know, Roe versus Wade law was passed, and you know, I think that we need to remember that you know, for me, life begins at conception, and I'm going to do everything I can to respect that and to hold that sacred. And this day reminds us of that, and so I encourage people to participate in those demonstrations and show support for the rights of the unborn.
Well, how do you answer those who claim that it is hypocritical to promote freedom from government intrusion in our lives, but to support government intrusion into the decisions women make regarding their bodies?
Well, I would think that people would recognize that it's not just about their body when they make that decision. It's about another life as well. And so, to, you know, what goes on in their body, certainly they have control over. But when we're talking about, you know, the helpless, defenseless unborn, I don't think that's something that can just be casually dismissed as, well, it's my body, I can do what I want. There's a body inside that body that deserves protection.
All right, very quick, less than a minute, but I wanted to get to some farm issues. We're still waiting on a new farm bill. I understand you've been named chair of an important subcommittee in the House Ag Committee. Where are we standing on farm issues?
Well, we're going to start marking up another farm bill. I thought we did a great job last year in June completing a very well-crafted bipartisan farm bill in the House. Unfortunately, it wasn't brought to the floor. We got the extension as a part of the fiscal cliff deal, but we're gonna start again. We've got a few new faces on the committee. I do expect, though, that we'll probably see another House version that is very similar to what we turned out last year. Very excited about being named as the subcommittee chairman for livestock rural development and credit. That gives me a larger platform to advocate for farm families in Arkansas and across the country. And you know, it's a big honor. I've gotten pretty close to the chairman, and he and I see eye to eye on these ag issues. And so I'm looking forward to working with him and my colleagues on the ag committee. Just excited about the whole deal.
All right, got to cut you off there. Thank you for joining us today.
You bet. Thank you.